Good morning, everyone. So like I was introduced, I'll be looking at more of the fungicide resistance and looking at it geographically over continental U.S. golf courses. And keep in mind that throughout this presentation, I will be looking at cool season turf collections, so no warm season here. So we had a really good introduction with Cameron on what dollar spot is, but the pathogen is Sclerotinia homeocarpa. As you can see, it's really destructive to greens and fairways. It's a pretty big problem worldwide, and it infects most commonly grown turf grasses, so it's a really robust pathogen. It's been noted that it might be one of the most economically important turf grass diseases. It's also pretty important because we see fungicide resistance developing readily in populations. I found this pretty interesting because the disease cycle for dollar spot does not really include a sexual stage. So the fact that it is readily developing resistance is kind of remarkable. You have the stroma in the dead plant tissue germinating, and from there it's just kind of hyphal colonization and then back to stroma. We're not seeing a lot of sexual potential for the formation of any kind of resistance quickly. So I've been interested in this, and a former lab mate, Alex Putnam, was also interested in this. So U.S. isolates that we've found are sterile. They produce apothecia, but they are not sexually recombining. There were older United Kingdom isolates that were found to have a sexual stage and viable ascospores from their apothecia, but not in the U.S. So why is this? He actually located some mating loci and was able to tell that the UK isolates are homothallic or self-fertilizing, while the modern-day US isolates are heterothallic and they require both mating types to be present. So this might explain why we don't see sorry about that. why we don't see the apothecia very readily in US isolates. And also, we just might not be seeing the sexual stage because it's not very discreet. So this might put us at a greater risk for fungicide resistance in this pathogen, which led him to go to some fungicide insensitivity assays in the Northeast, particularly of the U.S., because that is where we see the most problems with resistance and insensitivity formation. So he identified that several locations there were isolates that were insensitive to iperdiome, propiconazole, and thiophanate methyl. So we thought this was pretty cool. We wanted to see if we could apply this to a larger scale, if we could break up the U.S. into regions and characterize where we see insensitivities, if there are patterns for insensitivities, and how we can apply that to programs in the future to increase the longevities of our chemicals. So luckily, we have this huge bank of dollar spot isolates, or Sclerotinia. They were collected by Dr. Lane Treadway, and there are several thousand of them that I've had the pleasure of filing through. So a fraction of those are from the U.S., and I've selected some isolates to test to see if we can characterize any resistance in geographic regions. So I've chosen to break this into four regions. I originally had Southwest as a region, but cool season turf is not really viable here, and that was an overlook. But I've combined it into the West. So we have the U.S. Census version of our geographic regions. So first, I've decided to pick 20 isolates per region, because that seems viable with our current collection. And we're choosing them from cool season turf, from fairways and greens. Mainly, this is coming from creeping bentgrass. We're planning to do some in vitro assays, or I should say that we were planning to do some in vitro assays on amended media at the concentrations listed there, 0.01, 0.1, 1, 10, and 100 milligrams per liter, or you might know it better as parts per million. And we would like to test all of the fungicides listed here. So we have several fungicide classes represented. Well, I guess science had a different plan for us because we were gifted with this SDHI failure at our Lake Wheeler Research Station. So we were running a dollar spot trial. There were several chemicals involved, but we saw just complete lack of control with all of the SDHIs involved, which was pretty significant. Firstly, it can be significant because these are a lot of our chemistries coming to market in the future, in the coming years. So we're really concerned about longevity or risk for resistance development. In the past on the research station, we'd seen failure to control dollar spot with SDHIs, but only ever one at a time. This was the first time we saw all three at one time. And for some perspective, this green has been previously sprayed with emerald, so it may give some propensity. So here we have on the left our untreated control plot from that trial. So it's pretty blistered up, and then we have an emerald failure on the right. So these were treated using backpack sprayers, CO2-charged single boom, and they were applied every 21 days. The treatments were at the label rates for 21 days. Oh, did it go back? Oh, I guess it went forward. I didn't notice. So the Vilista failure we see on the left, and then we see emerald a little less severe in that particular picture on the right. And these photographs were taken 9 days after an application for the 21-day rate. So we looked at area under disease progress curves, and it doesn't look like my significant differences are going to show up. Okay, but we did see a significant difference between our SDHIs, our untreated control, and the rest of the study. Emerald, Exemplar, and Ballista all seem to fail. Definitely unacceptable levels of control there. So I've been saying SDHIs a lot, and if you're not particularly familiar with SDHIs, they're succinate dehydrogenase inhibitors. This is a picture of flupyrim, which is one of the new SDHIs coming on the market for dollar spot and nematode control. So it's a group with a lot of turf products coming on the market soon, as I have mentioned. And according to FRAC, they have a medium to high risk for resistance development. So this is something we should already be looking at when we incorporate them into our programs. Now, SDHIs are working on the enzyme succinate dehydrogenase, which is part of the mitochondrial respiration chain. So we think that's where that chain is being interrupted to control. So from these plots, I collected 10 leaf blades with sterilized forceps, and I collected 10 from each of the reps as well. So here's kind of what the area looked like, if a very sophisticated schematic for you. So I have it color-coded, and you can see where all the treatments, the SDHIs, were. And I collected 10 from each of those 10. I picked 2, so I ended up with a total of 24. So I also picked an isolate that was collected from the same location in 2003, and this was prior to any use of emerald, although it has seen some ProStar. I use this as my baseline for the in vitro studies to see if we could see a difference. So the in vitro methods, I grew out the isolates on potato dextrose agar for 6 days, and then we put 4 millimeter plugs onto 65 millimeter plates with 8 mL of the amended media with each of the following SDHIs. So we have the Vilista, or Pentheopyrad, Exemplar, Fluxapyrad, Vosclid, and Flupyrim, which we used in Demnify, which is actually a product for nematodes, but the fungi version, I believe Exteris, has chlorothalonil in it, so we wanted to see the results by itself. All plates were incubated at 25 degrees Celsius and were measured after 40 hours. So if you are unfortunate enough to volunteer to be in the lab with me that day, this is the kind of scene you would see. So we have all of these plates. That's about 450 of them. I know it doesn't look like a lot, but they're very small. So we took the isolates on the left there and just put plugs onto our amended media. So I have some preliminary results from our Vilista assay, and we do have a lot of data points that we're working with, and we just wanted to show something to kind of get the results of the study across to you. So I just graphed concentration versus the radial growth in millimeters, and I've grouped them by baseline and by the isolates that we picked from each treatment. So the plots from the control, the Volista treatments, the exemplar, and the Emerald treatments. So I've included some error bars with standard deviation to see how much variation we have at each concentration, and that's the baseline. Then we have the control, Volista, exemplar, and Emerald. And while this is pretty tightly grouped data, we're not seeing a very significant difference between these isolates. So we did this for the others. I've only included two for the sake of time. But this is exemplar, and we see a similar pattern, which is not really one, unfortunately. So this leads us to think that maybe amended media is not the best way to calculate these potential resistance or insensitivities. It's not a good way to see the difference. But we did notice some phenotypic responses. We had thinning of colonies in certain certain isolates, but we also had some other interesting phenotypic responses. So this is when my isolates plated on fluopyram, and this is after 7 days. You can see for the first three concentrations, there's not a lot of variation, and you don't see a lot of effect. We do expect the EC50 values for SCHIs to be a lot higher than you're probably used to, so this was kind of expected. When we get to 1 mg/L or parts per million, we see this pilling on the colony, which is kind of unusual, so some increased density at certain points. And then at 10 mg/L, we really see these cottony clouds of hyphae that are very unusual and I haven't really seen before. This is also not present on all of the replicates for this isolate at this concentration. It's 2 out of 3, so we don't really know how the SCHI is affecting the fungi here. And this was across several isolates that I saw this kind of phenotypic response. And there were others, like I said, there were the colony thinning and maybe some aerial hyphae more than usual, but I found this one to be the most exciting. And I had talked to a faculty member, and we were talking about the possibility of maybe it bumping, but we were able to locate several isolates where this happened randomly throughout the colony, either closer to the middle or still on the outside. And then you see the 100 mg/L is very thin and is clearly being affected by the fungicide. So one of our conclusions is that these amended media in vitro assays may not be the best way to quantify insensitivity with SCHIs, at least for Sclerotinia homeocarpa. So we have some other things that we'd like to try that I'll go over in just a second, but we do recognize that there may be other factors at work in the field setting. So our next steps are to try to do an assay using liquid broth so we can measure mycelial mass, and maybe that will give us a better idea. And then we would like to do some implantate trials to try to nail down exactly what may have happened in the field, and we'd like to inoculate with several isolates and more isolates for baseline and more isolates from our collection. We're having some molecular workup done by Dr. Joseph Roberts at University of Maryland, so he's already starting that on our isolates. He had previously made some primers for fungicide resistance and Sclerotinia homeocarpa, so he should be best at work with that. We'll continue to note these phenotypic responses to the SCHIs in this pathogen, and once we figure out exactly how to quantify resistance and insensitivity with SCHIs in this pathogen, we'll continue with our U.S. studies. But as you saw in the list previously, I have several SCHIs that I'm testing in that. So acknowledgments, and short and sweet, all of my lab, I appreciate you so much, and you've been a great help, and you might be the reason I don't get tinnitus later. So thank you so much, and thank you for your time today.